from 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Welcome into the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on a glorious Friday morning. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you. Jonathan Hutton will be back next week. He is furloughed this week. He'll be back on Monday. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Edley's Barbecue is authentically Nashville. It's locally owned. Two locations open, 12 South and Sylvan Park. Edley'sBBQ.com, and you can download the Edley's app. We have a great show on tap for you today. We're going to go a little bit of everywhere with this show. Austin Price is going to talk Vols at 10:30. Recruiting continues to look great for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt. We'll talk about that. We'll also discuss what the plans are for a possible June return for student athletes and coaches to Knoxville. We'll discuss the likelihood of that happening. Clay Travis joins us from his beach home in Florida from 11 to 11:30, where he is spending the entire month of May. Stephen Godfrey from Banner Society, 12:15 to 12:45 today. And John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, 1:15 to 1:45. PK, how are you this morning? Looking out your window, what would you guess the temperature is outside right now?
I'm going to guess the temperature is a reasonable 71 degrees, but it seems to be windy out there. And I don't know if that's a hot wind or a cooling wind. Also, for some reason, my sprinklers are set to go off at this hour. I'm not mistaking that for rain, given the sunshine, but the sprinkled water blowing wildly around, and I need to set those sprinkler times for a better time of day. Does still look like the Bellagio, as I used to say when I advertised for the sprinkler company.
Paul, those are definitely warm winds out of the south at 24 miles per hour. It is currently 78 degrees in the Music City.
Wow. Even warmer than I thought.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get that window open or even maybe turn on some AC before the show's over. I'll keep you updated on that. I know people will be dying to know. The office tends to get a little warm when I close the doors, which are not closed yet, which I'm sure is going to prompt some contempt from the upstairs residents of this home.
I love how you're rationed off upstairs and downstairs residents at this time. It's like you've quarantined in the house and you've also quarantined from each other. You have different wings of the house that you occupied all the time.
There's an upstairs office worker in this house as well, and then there's an upstairs Fortnite player.
Ah, gotcha.
Fortunately, I've got some distance from him. Otherwise, you'd really be hearing some gamer strategy. And then there'd be some fights, and then things would calm down. You know, Dad, like 10-year-olds, it's what 10-year-old boys do, I'm often told.
It's everyone in the Kuharski house is punching the clock in some way right now. Dad's on his radio program on 104.5 The Zone. Mom's working her job. And son Simon is punching the clock on Fortnite, trying to up that score. Is it a score in Fortnite? What is it, a level that you reach? How does that work?
Fortnite thing that he ordered, now we are looking for eBay to intervene. Nothing has shown up. He's convinced he's been scammed, and he is absolutely miserable about it. So it's very upset. The letter we got from the U.S. Postal Service that we thought was not. It's a from Brentwood City officials or whatever officials about somebody across the street here who's building a wall alongside their house, which doesn't seem to meet the requirements of the neighborhood. And I would like to attend this meeting or zoom into it because I'm against it. I'm going on record as I'm against this wall.
Please tell me John Rich is involved in this in some form or fashion.
Exactly. Reed and I had the same exact thought. John Rich is moving into Paul's neighborhood in Brentwood.
This would be so great.
This is going to be his fifth home just to mess with Paul. He's going to build a moat around it also, and a wall. It's going to be great.
There should be a wall right up against the sidewalk where I feel like I'm walking in a city when I live in a suburb.
Yeah, why a wall? That seems like a pretty drastic step with a neighborhood like yours with I'm guessing, a pretty stringent HOA.
They're building a it's either a giant koi pond or a hot tub back
in
there.
In the front yard?
Some privacy. No, in the backyard, but it's a corner house. And so this is along the side and the sidewalk going into the next neighborhood. I disapprove entirely. And hopefully I'm more effective at this meeting at swaying people than I was at the John Rich meeting.
In my house, I've got Evie downstairs. It's a Disney sing-along throughout the morning. She has her headphones on, and she's listening to Disney songs on the iPad, and I'll randomly walk downstairs to get coffee or a snack, and Evie will just be singing at the top of her lungs, not knowing how loud she's singing while she's doing her schoolwork. She's just got a Disney song.
You need to record some of this and bring it to air. Negotiate with her to bring it on air.
Should I just get the audio and send it to Reed at some point with whatever song she's on? She was on the Hercules soundtrack last I checked, which was an interesting choice. Usually it's Lion King. What's the other one? Little Mermaid's a go-to. Aladdin. She likes the Aladdin soundtrack, but Hercules is really the flavor of the day right now.
I celebrate the entire catalog. I would love to hear any of this on our airways. It would be a ratings grabber for sure. Tell her you can begin to build her career by broadcasting some of this. And if she's against it, tell her how Simon periodically comes on.
We'll see if mom signs off.
She sings.
Mom will need to sign a release to make sure that her music can be played on the zone. So we'll see about that.
Mom's fine.
Great time last night in our midday mixer presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, home of the original Tennessee whiskey, as well as Bellmead Bourbon and many other fine spirits made with loving care in Nashville. Great seeing Charlie Nelson from Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery join us for the mixer last night. The first one, we did not have a special celebrity guest.
Paul
dropped the ball on that, but I will say that with it just being the group and our listeners in there, Paul, I thought it was a very, this is a circle of trust, so we can't carry really anything on to live radio that was discussed, but I thought it was a very productive room last night. We had some honest critiques. We had honest assessment of us. And it was some good back and forth with people. It was great.
We had one guy who was kind of keeping tabs of who was doing the most drinking, which I thought was very interesting when he was like, nobody's really drinking in here except, and then he listed off the six people who were doing the most serious drinking. It was a fun group. I enjoyed them. I think they had a good time, and it's been a good idea. Well executed, if I may say so, on our behalves, and a lot of fun. Enjoyed getting to know that crew.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer it'll continue. We're, according to Dr. Schaffner yesterday, looking good right now in progress to get to phase two, I guess, a week from this upcoming Monday, since phase one in Nashville started on Monday. So maybe a couple more of these mixers, maybe not. I'm guessing maybe up until June, Paul, when a lot more people are starting to go back to work. And then there won't be a need for the social distancing part of it at that point with the mixer. So we'll see. We'll play it by ear. How about that?
Sounds about right.
Just
Thank
like
you
that.
For those who have come to all of the ones that we've held so far, I think it's been a success. We don't operate in failure realms. So.
And if you have not been in a mixer yet, you want to be in a future one, just send us a message on Twitter, Midday180, best way to get in touch with us. Paul, one thing that I do want to bring on air that was brought up in the mixer last night that I think is good for a quick discussion, and it's probably going to lead to a bigger discussion amongst Titans fans, but sort of the what to do if you're a season ticket holder or you're wanting to buy tickets. The NFL is going about it like, hey, it's business as usual. All fans are going to be allowed. We're going to sell tickets. The season's going to start at this time. It's going to end at this time. And yet there's still a lot of uncertainty out there from a lot of consumers and fans about what to do. But sort of twofold, how to go about ticket renewal and if people should do that and how the refunds are going to work if things don't work out. But also, if there's a percentage of stadium that's allowed, well, how will each individual team go about deciding? And maybe this is something we talk to the Titans about at some point to get an idea of what they're thinking. Is it going to be a league decision on that, or will it be individual clubs in terms of deciding who gets the tickets and how?
It remains to be seen, and I don't know that the league's going to offer many hints or teams are going to be allowed to offer many hints on this because for the time being they want the presumption of full stadiums and regular operations. For a couple reasons, because that's what they hope, and they don't want to set off a whole bunch of speculation, because they'd like the money to continue to come in. I don't know what renewal rates have been. I can dig a little bit with the Titans and see what I can find out. but they want things to go on as are normal. I think they also want season ticket holders, and the Titans deadline has come and gone. They had pushed it back to early May. I don't think they pushed it back again. They want your money in their pockets, and they want things lined up like usual, and then they'll proceed from there. I think if you're a fan that is the type that's determined to be in the building if it's a reduced crowd, you know that that's going to be probably select season ticket holders, and if you want to be part of that lottery or whatever system it is, you've got to have your tickets in order to have a chance at that.
So the hope is for everyone, the league, college football, fans, is that there's a way to safely go attend football games this fall and not have to worry that much about it, and hope that people now, and I would think most Americans and people around the world are going to be a lot more conscious about things like washing their hands and maybe not getting right up in the face of people if you can avoid it at times, right? I think that's something that we're going to see a lot more of. People are just going to be more knowledgeable about those things and more cognizant of that. But ultimately, what fans want certainly is to be able to gather and go to games. And that's definitely what leagues want. That's what conferences in college football want. That's what the NFL wants. So they're going to continue to go with that hope. And hopefully we're talking about sold-out games at Nissan Stadium this fall.
Let's link a conversation we had with Tom Morales earlier this week, a downtown restaurateur who said operating at 50% capacity with him wasn't as healthy for his business as staying in a coma. Let's take that and apply it hypothetically to an NFL franchise in terms of attendance. Next.
It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
It's a titanic offseason for the Titans, and your home for Titans football is right here. 104.5, The Zone.
It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, you've heard of Nashville Hot Chicken. Edley's now serving Nashville-style hot pork every Friday. Edley'sBBQ.com, and you can download the Edley's app as well. Chad Withrow, Paul Kaharsky with you. David Reed is our chairman of the board. And, Paul, as we were going into break, you were discussing our interview with Tom Morales earlier this week. He made the decision that opening at 50% capacity isn't worth it at places like Acme Feed and Seed and the Southern Steak and Oyster because of the overhead, because of what it takes to keep those places operational with food costs and labor costs and everything else, and how that may apply to the NFL.
So what's it cost to open Nissan Stadium for a day, even expecting a smaller crowd? So you could have fewer staff at certain things, concessionaires and the like. You're probably going to need more, or, you know, redistribution in terms of, you know, maybe monitoring bathroom lines, certainly ingress and egress in terms of helping people maintain social distancing coming in and going out. We've heard, you know, there'd be like church pew exit kind of things, or certainly you're not just going to pour to the exits and all gather at the turnstiles to go out the way that we're used to. But somebody brought this up in my All 22 conversation very smartly. You know, isn't there a point at which it actually costs you more to open with a limited crowd than you're bringing in? And then you said, as we were kind of thinking about talking about this, you know, is the NFL going to force it anyway, just for the optics of it? And can the league force its teams to do something that's purely for optics or for the feel good of having some fans in there when it's not going to make you any money? I can see some owners who are the cheapest owners around. Is Dan Snyder going to say, yeah, let's open FedEx Field at a loss? You know, there are going to be some maverick people who push back against it if, in fact, that would be the case. And so I think we're getting into some complex ideas here. And then it wouldn't just be for the NFL, though the NFL's on a bigger scale. But if you've got hockey back at Bridgestone Arena and you're operating at a quarter capacity, or an NBA game is, you know, you're making that a hot ticket, but are you raising the prices four times?
I feel like, Paul, if you go, whatever the number is, it's 15,000, it's 20,000, it's a third, it's a half capacity, whatever it may be. Even if the mandate is from health officials that you can't have a full stadium, I just feel like the NFL is so savvy financially that they'll find a way to make that number a break-even point at least, right? Like if the number's 25,000, that's your break-even, well, then 25,000 fans can buy tickets and go to the game. And so even the franchises that are the most cash-strapped in that situation, let's say, they at least break even based on their ticket prices if they do that. I also think, in comparing it with what Tom Morales had to say, Tom Morales said a lot in that interview, but I'll also say this about Tom Morales' businesses. He's located right downtown where a lot of people that go to Acme Feed and Seed or the Southern, they're out-of-town people coming in and staying in hotels, right? So what makes sense for Tom Morales to not open wouldn't make sense for a restaurant owner in Nolensville or Mount Juliet or even Brentwood or Franklin.
Neighborhood restaurant.
When they're having people come in from the neighborhood that want to get out and go eat there. They're locals. That's their base.
Or Tom also relies on neighborhood business.
Yes. Well, and so, right, people who work there that would go eat lunch or whatever it may be or go there for drinks after they get
business
off work.
Meeting.
So where Tom Morales, it's so uncertain even if you open at half capacity with no tourists really in Nashville right now, how many people would show up, at least with the NFL in this situation, you know you'd have a fixed number, right? You've already sold those. You could easily have 20,000. You know 20,000 tickets will be bought if you can sell 20,000 tickets, for instance, or whatever the number will be. So there will be a fixed number. The comparison with Tom Morales and his restaurant's a little bit different because there's no fixed number. You can open at half capacity and 10% capacity could show up, and then you're in trouble. So you would know it with the NFL.
But again, if you're just doing this to break even, I mean, that runs counter to the very, and this isn't just for the NFL, this is for anybody. Who's opening up their business and saying, today, we're going to break even? It runs against the very fabric of running a business, whose purpose is to make money. You know, and so how excited is Burke Nihil, who I believe is on 3HL later on, the new president of the Titans? How excited is Amy Adams Strunk? How excited is the business operation of the Titans to get to work today to break even in a best case scenario? It's not fundamentally what you're about on the business side, the football side separate. And Mike Vrabel and John Robinson aren't worrying about that stuff. They need to go out and win football games, no matter who's in the building and what's going on and all of that. But on the operations side, and look, you're going to go and do your job and do it as best you can and all of that. But what you're looking for is the turnstile count and the concession numbers and the merchandise and all of that. And now your job is just to see if you could come out of it not at a loss. It kind of runs counter to the whole, not just American sporting ethos, but the whole American ethos.
Well, and I think just like the federal government in times of crisis can mandate a business to start creating something different and making something different, and they may do that at a loss or break even where they're going to be a lot more profitable making what they normally make. I do think that the NFL, it's not the federal government, but let's face it, it may be as big as the federal government with the amount of money and power they have. The NFL can come in and also say, you're going to do this, and you may lose a little bit this year, but it's going to help us in the long run with fans, and we need to allow some fans there. Same goes for baseball in our discussion yesterday. I mean, there's no perfect scenario now. The season's going to be half gone regardless. So a half season with no fans, well, baseball owners aren't going to be making a lot of money this year. But I also think that there's a bit of a public service element to it. That if you can make it work or break even or not make as much or make, you know, lose a little bit in the short term, it helps your product and helps the sport in the long term. Because I think, let's just use baseball as an example. Baseball going away for an entire year in no way is good for the sport in the long run. Whatever scenario they have for a half season and people getting excited about their team and watching the playoffs, however many people watch on television when the playoffs were to get here in October, and maybe fans are in the parks, you know, in September and October at the end of the season also. There comes a time where you have to just suck it up and make it work, right? And whatever the options are, do it. And maybe that's what we're looking at with the NFL also, even if it's not the optimum financial situation.
But I lean lazy here. Would you rather break even by doing nothing, or would you rather break even by working your tail off on a Sunday afternoon, opening your building, having workers, doing all this stuff? It seems, you know, the Tom Morales plan makes sense to me.
Well, they wouldn't make nothing. Because just having the sport, you're going to make money off television and everything else.
I'm talking about building operation part.
It's a great question. I don't know. I guess you really, Paul, get a sense of what you think about your fans going to the game at that point. Because on one hand, you're right. What business would say, I care so much about my constituents and my fans or my patrons, whatever it is, that I am going to go through all this work and effort to reopen. I'm going to open up my business, and I'm going to allow 20,000 fans to come in. I'm going to lose a little bit of money doing that, or I'm going to break even in that proposition. It's going to be a lot of work for me and my staff, but that's what I want to do because I love my fans so much. Or you say, like any capitalist in America would say, it's not worth it for the effort that you would put into it. But then the fans are frozen out.
I guess that's what it boils down to, is doing something for your fans. And based on that, you should. For the optics and for the relationship. Maybe it's as simple as that.
V-Love tweets us, by the way, and says his third payment was withdrawn today for season tickets. And his understanding is if you can't attend games, you'll get an option to roll over payment for 2021 tickets or get a refund. That's what he's hearing from the Titans on that, which makes perfect sense.
I'm told they've agreed to work with individuals who've expressed a need for more time. It's case by case, but there's not a blanket extension beyond that early May deadline. So I'm sure there are a lot of people working with the Titans ticket office as need be.
Is Tennessee about to get more good news on the recruiting front? We'll ask Austin Price of VolQuest.com. That's next. It's the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
You know what? They may not be playing the games, but we're still talking sports. The Sports Station, 104.5, The Zone.
Price, VolQuest.com, joins us twice a week, Mondays and Fridays, right here on the Midday 180 to talk Vols. And there has been plenty to talk about the last couple of weeks with Tennessee recruiting. Austin Price on with us now in his lovely home setup with the Masters logo on the wall behind him. Austin, welcome in, man. How are you?
What's up, guys?
So I'm reading the War Room this morning at VolQuest. And everyone is kind of speculating now about not if a season's going to happen per se. They're more and more optimistic that's going to happen, but when teams can arrive back on campus to start conditioning and everything else. Yeah. There's a growing optimism that maybe June could be a time for Tennessee players and coaches to return. Lincoln Riley of Oklahoma saying something completely different, that it's foolish for anyone to think about coming back before, you know, fall semester starts. Where do you think Tennessee is in that decision-making process right now, Austin? And is there a possibility that players return in June?
Yeah, I think there's a real possibility they return in June. I don't think it's a slam dunk, but I do think that that's something that the entire SEC is talking about. If you're Tennessee, I think that they are looking at the logistical issues and possible problems that would come with players coming back in June and trying to work out the kinks. And, this may be one of the few times that all Tennessee fans want to agree with Mike Gundy, who, of course, you know, is ready for Oklahoma State players to be back on campus, whereas his counterpart at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, is not.
Well, Mike Gundy also ready for the Tennessee job to open back up again so he can get himself a raise by talking to whoever the athletic director is. He's done that successfully twice now publicly flirting with Tennessee to get a raise from Oklahoma State. With football recruiting right now, it's funny. It feels like a slow moment because nothing's happened since this past weekend in terms of commitments. There's a number of tight ends on the board for Tennessee. And if we're looking at possibly players that may announce soon or Tennessee may get some good news from, is the tight end position one to watch right now, Austin?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Miles Campbell is set to do something on Monday. That's his birthday. Tennessee has been trending there for a while, but specifically the last two or three weeks, you know, things have kind of looked positive for Tennessee. And then Tennessee going to continue to recruit Trinity Bell. He just dropped his top five the other day, his final five. You know, would expect him to do something, you know, coming up here sometime in the future. And then Hudson Wolf, you know, out of Hardin County, I think he'll probably do something probably within the next month. I mean, you know, I don't think it's, you know, anything. There's not a specific date. I don't think he's going to set a specific date. I think it'll just kind of happen. It could happen, you know, next week. It could happen 5 weeks from now. Point is he's taking, you know, he's moving towards a decision, yet going at his own pace. And that's a Tennessee-Ohio State battle, in my opinion. I think Alabama and Ole Miss are kind of looming right there at 3 and 4, but I think Tennessee surged, and Ohio State's kind of been that team that's always been there. So Tennessee wants to add playmakers at the tight end position. They did not sign one a year ago, so it makes sense to go multiple guys this time around. And, you know, let's face it, Trinity Bell, a tight end, but, you know, at 263 pounds as a high school junior, you know, very well could grow out of that position, you know, with work in the college weight room.
And Tennessee's had some pretty good luck in the past with guys who came in as a tight end that were that athletic that grew a bit and became a good tackle for them also. So certainly one to watch.
Yeah.
So, Austin, I wanted to ask about peer recruiting, specifically in this class. You talked about Kamara Wilcoxon being a key cog in that peer recruiting element of it. Group texts are common. I don't know that recruiting class Zoom meetings are that common with other teams, recruiting classes out there. What can you tell us about possibly the players that are committed to Tennessee having Zoom meetings? And are there some players that aren't currently in the class that are taking part in these Zoom meetings?
Chad, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, I didn't know what Zoom was. So
me neither.
Or Skype, or I mean, I knew what these things were, but I'd never done them. Because you never, you know, you weren't forced to. So now it's like commonplace. It's like this is where I want to be. Not, I mean, I want to get out of my house, but you know, I mean, as far as you know, this just makes it easy.
I got you.
You know, with each, you know, year, there's new trends, there's new ways to go about things, and this is kind of that latest thing. So yeah, Tennessee's, you know, current commits have gotten on Zoom calls with, you know, players like, you know, Amarius Mims, the big offensive tackle down in Georgia, like Smile Munden, the big. He's just a kind of a rock linebacker in the state of Georgia. So yeah, they're working things hard, and realistically, I think this is a great way to kind of get to know each other because you're seeing each other. A lot of these kids know each other anyway. Like Miles Campbell, you know, he said to do something on Monday. If he ends up picking Tennessee, then you know, Smile Munden, somebody that you know, hey, he's seen him before. They played peewee football against each other. Now they've not seen each other as much in recent years since they're at separate high schools. But they've known each other for a long time. Same thing with a lot of these Georgia kids. They've seen each other at camps, at different recruiting visits and stuff. So, you know, to be able to get on those Zoom calls and build relationships further down the line, I think helps Tennessee. It helps kids. And, I mean, really any program that's doing this is smart because I think it kind of continues to cultivate and build relationships.
So, Austin, Tennessee, with 21 current commitments and possibly others signing up, committing in short order here also. So the thought out there is, okay, Tennessee's class looks to be almost done. They're going to get worse. Georgia and LSU and Alabama only going to get better because they don't have a lot of commitments right now, which I can see where people would say that. My question, though, is this in terms of Tennessee's recruiting class. I think everyone's looking at it as Tennessee already has the blue chip guys, 4 and 5 star they're going to get, and they're not getting any more. They just need to hold on to those, and they may lose a couple. But what are the chances that Tennessee's class even looks better in the end when all this is said and done? Because maybe they add a few more 4 and 5 stars, and maybe some of those 3 stars end up in someone else's recruiting class that are at the bottom of the list right now for Tennessee.
Well, I think that, one, you're going to see, because of the way the rankings are currently set, once we get, you know, hopefully we get back to football this fall. If we do, then I think you'll see some, you know, the evaluations change on kids. I think you'll see some kids rise in the rankings. And then two, you know, I don't think Tennessee's done with their blue chip guys. I think they're still very much in play for some headline type players. You know, and they're using these other guys like Will Coxon and Dylan Brooks and Cody Brown to go out and try to reel in an Amarius Mims or Smile Munden or whoever else. So, you know, Tennessee wants to add, you know, the best players they can in this class. I think there's natural attrition. You know, Tennessee's sitting at 21 right now. I think you should look at it more like Tennessee's sitting at 17, 16, 17. I just think there's going to be natural attrition. I think there's going to be, you know, an opportunity to improve this class. But you also have to spend time continuing to recruit the guys you already have in, because you don't want them to go, oh, yeah, you got me to commit. Now I don't even hear from you anymore. You don't ever want them to feel that way. And so, you know, Tennessee's got to continue to you know, work this 21 class, all the while spring forwarding to 22, where Tennessee spent a good portion of the week working on in-state 22s, out-of-state 22s, and trying to get those players, you know, here or on virtual, you know, visits as quick as possible.
So a rare basketball question for you this time of year, Austin. Mac McClung, a star player at Georgetown, rough time for Patrick Ewing, by the way, at Georgetown right now, losing his best player, looked like he was going to go to the NBA draft, decides to come back to college, but he's not going to go to Georgetown. He's transferring. He's from Gate City, Virginia. There's been some rumors that he may look to transfer to Tennessee. But there's also a tie-in with a future possible Tennessee commitment that is a highly rated point guard in the city of Memphis, and maybe a reason why Tennessee wouldn't take Mac McClung as a transfer because of the possibility of landing this five-star player. What can you tell us about that whole situation?
Well, McClung, you know, grew up in a family that had a lot of Vol fans in it. You know, I think he'd love to be here, but at the
sister
end of the day,
played soccer at Tennessee also, I think.
Right.
There's a tie in there.
Is he going to, you know, beat out one of the guys they have coming in, whether it be, you know, Keon Johnson or anybody else? You know, I say no. And so at that rate, you know, why go down that road when it could potentially hurt you with a guy like Kennedy Chandler out of, you know, out of the city of Memphis? So I think, you know, Tennessee right now is in a great spot for Chandler. Got to get that one to the finish line, but I think they've done a phenomenal job recruiting him. And so, you know, I see the merit in why some fans automatically want to take Mac McClung, but I also see the notion of, hey, you know, you don't want it to hurt you with one of the top players in the country in this next class. And in Kennedy Chandler, man, he moves like Jordan Bone as far as speed with the ball. I mean, you know, that's one thing Tennessee missed last year was the ability to get up and down the floor. And he can really, really get up and down the floor.
Well, and to put into perspective, Kennedy Chandler as a prospect, even with the 3 5-star players Tennessee signed the last 2 years and the great recruiting of Rick Barnes, correct me if I'm wrong, Austin, but Kennedy Chandler would be the highest rated 5-star prospect ever signed by Rick Barnes at Tennessee if they're able to land him out of Whitehaven in Memphis.
Yeah, I do believe that to be correct. And like I said, I mean, he's dynamic with the ball in his hands and can really change the game with not only his defense, where he's a pesky defender, but also his ability to get up and down the court in a hurry.
Austin Price, VolQuest.com, at Austin Priceless on Twitter. Always a pleasure talking Vols with Austin Price twice a week, Mondays and Fridays. Austin, thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
That's Austin Price, VolQuest.com. Von Miller had some things to say about stopping Patrick Mahomes. Is it even possible? Did Von Miller display a loser's mentality with an answer to the Washington Post, or is he simply being honest? We'll explain. That's next. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
The 3HL talks Vols with Jason Swain. Presented by Gary Ashton of RE/MAX Advantage. Thursdays at 5:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back in to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's, by the way, has some opportunities ahead that we'll talk about a little bit later. Right now, though, wanted to talk about a quote from Von Miller, and this was to the Washington Post. Chad Withrow, Paul Kaharsky, by the way, with you. David Reed is our chairman of the board. And Paul, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. We've talked a lot about the draft with Greg Cosell and what the AFC West did with the Raiders and the Broncos specifically to add speed, to add quick playmaking ability. Obviously they want to score with the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's the goal. But Von Miller told the Washington Post when asked about defending Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and he said, I quote, "Can't stop him. We got to score more points. If we're able to get off the field and hold them to a third down here and there, that's great, but then it's on our offense. We've got to score on offense because we cannot. It's not smart to go in a game and say we're going to hold Mahomes to no points." Now, I completely agree. It's not smart to go into a game saying
that no points part is where he kind of lets himself off the hook.
That's also not smart to say about any team in any football at any level that, hey, we got to hold this team to no points to have a chance. Clearly, you have to have an offense, and maybe this is him saying the offense hasn't been up to par. The defense has been doing their job. We need the offense to get better and score points. I also think it's a little over the top and defeatist for one of the best defenders in the league to say, you can't stop them. We're not going to stop them. All we can hope for is that the offense scores points. I also think it minimizes his role with the team and a defense's role. Right. If you're going to say that, then it would be easy for someone to come back and say, then why are we paying you so much? Why do we pay defenders that much at all? If you're saying there's no stopping the best quarterback in the league and the only thing that matters in the game are both offenses, and you're just sitting out, basically you're going out there to run a few plays and get a touchdown scored on you at some point. So I don't think it was the smartest thing for him to say. Also, Paul, he was being very honest. You're not going to stop Patrick Mahomes right now, more than likely.
Well, I think it's interesting. We've talked about this a little bit in the Titans approach and the way the Titans are built. They continued to build. They didn't change their formula. They're still going to approach this the same way. They haven't talked either about Kansas City being a target or the Colts or the Texans being a target. They're building to compete in the AFC without a specific team in mind, the way they tell it. Chiefs are obviously going to be a team you're going to have to deal with for a while here to get past or to luck your way past with somebody else beating them to get to the Super Bowl as the AFC representative. Titans look to play good defense and to eat some clock with Derrick Henry and to play a more conventional formula. It's interesting that two of the teams in the Chiefs division who are going to play them twice a year really went big on this kind of Von Miller thinking with Von Miller's Broncos and the Raiders stocking up on wide receivers and looking like they intend to be teams who are going to try to keep up with them better and score with them more. Not that they can match them, but when you're adding Jerry Jeudy and Hamler, you're saying, hey, we're going to try to be more of a high-flying offense like the Chiefs. And not that we're going to match them stride for stride, but that we're going to convert a lot more third downs and keep the ball and score more points. And then you look at the Raiders doing similar things with receivers. I mean, the Raiders have a billion receivers now to sort through. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. I think the Titans should do more offensively. Evans is going to help them do more offensively. I would have liked to have seen a receiver come into the mix there too. I think you've got to do more to match them offensively while doing more to stop them defensively. The answer is both, not one or the other.
Well, and maybe I've been brainwashed by watching The Last Dance and just seeing Jordan's mentality about everything, but it's just weird for me to see a guy who's really good, one of the best linebackers in the league, just concede defeat before the games even happen. We're not stopping Patrick Mahomes, or are you kidding me? And maybe it's because I've been watching Michael Jordan talk about everyone for so long now and the hatred he has and how he believes he's better than everyone and will stop everyone and score every time down. Just hearing that defeated attitude, and I think he's being completely honest with himself about what he feels going up against Patrick Mahomes. Maybe it's also a referendum on rules and how it's slanted for the offense that he's getting at with some of this, than not being able to stop a guy like that? I don't know, but if I'm a Broncos fan, I just don't appreciate it coming from a leader on defense that you're saying, yeah, we're not going to stop him. We just got to hope our offense scores a bunch of points because we're not going to stop the guy.
Well, everything he says is consistent and kind of makes sense as the concession speech until he gets to the very end there and says, we're not going to hold him to 0 points. Well, nobody's asking you to hold him to 0 points. The question is, can you keep him around 20 instead of 30 or 40, right? If you hold him till to 20, then any any reasonably good offense has a chance to compete with that. Nobody's asking you to hold them to zero. Why all of a sudden you're making this reasoned argument about how difficult it is to compete with them, and then you say, well, nobody's going to hold them to zero. Well, all of a sudden you've completely changed the bar. I mean, I know defenses talk about going into games every week about holding people to zero, but that's like fantasy land stuff. How many shutouts do we see in a year?
Right.
Two? So that's where he kind of all of a sudden – sets up an unreasonable bar. No, Vaughn, nobody's expecting you to hold anybody to zero. Certainly not Patrick Mahomes. I feel safe saying the Chiefs aren't going to get shut out in the Patrick Mahomes era if Patrick Mahomes is playing. Somebody holding them to 10 would be a phenomenal defensive effort. But I think his idea that you're going to have to score to compete with the Chiefs, I don't know that anybody's going to argue with that. I don't think you can go into a game against the Chiefs and say, we're holding them to 14 and we're going to beat them by scoring 17. I think at best, you're going to hold them in the 20s and you're going to have to score in the 20s. And I think the Titans at their best, which might not be with this roster, which might be a year or two away, in terms of replenishing, getting younger, finding the pass rusher, getting better at receiver still. But at the Titans' best, do they beat the Chiefs? What's the score range there? I would think it's 27-24.
Yeah, but if I'm a Titans fan, I'm still pissed off if Kevin Byard comes in and says, we can't stop him. It's just not going to happen. I don't know. Even if it's true, I don't think you say that.
I don't think anybody on the Titans would say that.
I agree with you.
That's and Von Miller's probably mentality. Better. Von Miller's arguably better than any Titans defender, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Well, I mentioned Edley's Barbecue before. I want to let everyone know Edley's has started the process of reopening their East Nashville location, and they are hiring. So for those out there looking for jobs, Edley's Barbecue hiring at all locations, but especially with the East Nashville location right now. You can visit edleysbbq.com/jobs for more details. Clay Travis will join us from his luxury Florida condo. That's next. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.